This Janet Mefford Today podcast is sponsored by Prison Fellowship. Help send a child of a prisoner to Angel Tree Summer Camp with a gift of any amount. Call 855-512-6435 or go to janetmefford.com and click on the Angel Tree banner. Thank you.
This is Janet Mefford Today.
Our confidence is in Christ alone.
Are we going to stand with God, come what may?
If the Word of God says it, I believe it.
And that's the way it is.
And now, here is Janet Mefford.
It is great to be with you again. So glad that you've tuned in to join us. And I am really excited about what Vice President Pence had to say when he was delivering remarks at the World Summit in Defense of Persecuted Christians. This was an event. It's actually going through Saturday. It's an event sponsored by the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association, featuring a number of persecuted Christians and church leaders and advocates from 130 countries to talk about and address the growing and ongoing atrocities that have been committed against Christians all across the world. And first of all, it's a great shot in the arm to have Vice President Pence there for a number of reasons, not the least of which was the remarks that he actually delivered, because they were fantastic. I want to play some of those for you so you can hear and recall and really ruminate over the fact that this man is the Vice President of the United States saying these things. Some of the things you're going to hear, you may be used to hearing because you listen to Christian radio or you hear it from the pulpit when you go to church. You don't often hear these things from a very, very high-ranking politician. And this is great stuff. Let's get to it. Here he's talking about Trump's commitment to persecuted Christians. This is cut one.
He's made it clear that America will stand by followers of Christ in this hour of need. Our administration is fully committed to bringing relief and comfort to believers, not only across the Middle East, but across the world. This president knows that terrorists will not stop until we stop them. And under President Donald Trump, we will stop them.
Now just think how long we spent for the last 8 years wanting to hear that kind of tough talk, not just the tough talk about stopping Islamic terrorism, but standing by believers. And knowing that the audience knows exactly what kind of believers he's speaking about. Fantastic. Then he went on to assure everybody that the president is committed to fighting terrorism. This is cut two.
President Trump, we not only have a leader who calls our enemy by name, we have a president who is confronting those who commit terror, no matter the home or hut or cave in which they hide. President Trump, I can promise you, the armed forces of the United States of America, working with our allies in the region, in Iraq and Afghanistan, we will not rest, we will not relent, till we hunt down and destroy ISIS at its source.
Again, really encouraging, hunting down and destroying. This is the kind of talk that I haven't heard since George W. Bush. And frankly, it's music to my ears to hear it again, because it shows the kind of resolve that the administration once again has to go after the biggest threat to this world right now, arguably, which is Islamic terrorism. Now, Vice President Pence also talked a little bit about a story of visiting with a U.S. service member he had talked to, and this was a service member who was injured in Mosul. This is interesting. Cut three.
Because of the action of President Donald Trump, ISIS is already on the run. Progress in Mosul is tangible, but the fight goes on. And I would say to each of you, persevere in prayer for those who wear the uniform and who are in this fight. Carry them in your prayers. I was out at Walter Reed Hospital not long ago with one of our service members who had been injured in Mosul. And like all of our courageous men and women, the only thing he wanted to do was get better and get back in the fight. So carry them in your prayers. The effective and fervent prayer of a righteous people availeth much. We ask you to avail yourselves of the opportunity to remember our armed forces as they fight for our freedom across the world. And rest assured, in the Middle East and North Africa, anywhere terror strikes, America stands with those who are targeted and tormented for their belief, whether they're Christian, Yazidi, Druze, Shia, Sunni, or any other creed. President's commitment to protecting people of faith also will not end with the elimination of ISIS or the eradication of terror. Under President Donald Trump, America will continue to condemn persecution of any kind, of any faith, any place, any time. We will stand against it with our ideals and with all our might.
And to think how long it took us just to get the State Department under Barack Obama to admit that there was a huge persecution problem against Christians. How long did it take them to call it genocide? A long time, a really long time. And what about the importance of freedom of religion? This is also something the vice president talked about. Cut four.
The freedom to worship God according to the dictates of our conscience is at the very heart of who we are as Americans. In a very real sense, America was founded by people who had the courage to cross the Atlantic, motivated in so many cases to come here so that they might have that freedom of religion. Truth is, today, for all the prosperity of the freedom of faith in America and other free societies, today, according to the Pew Center, nearly 80% of the human family lives in places where restrictions on religion are either high or very high. It's a 5% increase in a single year. Too many nations let the mob trample on the rights of the minority. Still more prefer the coercion of the state to conviction of the soul. And the limitations placed on people of belief have become too numerous to count. They range from violence to vandalism, forced conversion to crush free speech, blasphemy laws to building codes to detainment to death. Across the wider world, Christians face this and more. But to be clear, adherents of other religions across the world have not been spared. And we will speak for them and pray for them as well.
Now, what I find really important about that is the freedom of religion line. I think that that's so important to point out. It isn't just the freedom to worship. And when you consider the 80% of people who are living in countries where they are oppressed and persecuted or live under great stress, you have to remember that, generally speaking, nowadays it has to do with Islam. It also has to do with communist countries, certainly like North Korea. But in most cases, you can look at some of these persecuted church watch lists like Open Doors puts out and other groups, and it's by and large radical Islam and Islamic fundamentalism that is oppressing Christians throughout the world. Now, this is the best cut of all. I've been saving the best for last. And again, I want you to consider the contrast between the way this vice president talks and the way the last one did. Listen to cut five.
The Bible tells us all who desire to live a godly life in Christ Jesus will be persecuted. And those of you gathered here today are emblematic of millions across the world. You've persevered through the crucible of persecution. You refuse to be conformed to this world. You have chosen instead to be counted with those outside the city gate for your faith. By your life, you bear witness to the truth that brings us together here at this summit. The reality is, across the wider world, Christian faith is under siege. Throughout the world, no people of faith today face greater hostility or hatred than followers of Christ.
I just love that. I'm not happy, clearly, about the subject matter, persecuted Christians. I weep for the persecuted Christians, and I pray for them, and I would love to see the problem eradicated. But I am so encouraged. I am so encouraged to hear the Vice President of the United States stand up and talk about all who desire to live a godly life in Christ Jesus will be persecuted, straight out of the Word of God. He gets it as a Christian. He gets it, and he says it. And we cannot take for granted the fact that we are hearing somebody of that caliber speaking like that, to hear not only the Word of God being put forward in context in the right way, but also to hear him offer the assurances to these persecuted Christians and those who support persecuted Christians that the Trump administration not only will stand with you for Christian believers across the globe, but we're also going to go after those who are persecuting you. And that's an answer to prayer, folks. I don't care what you think about the individuals who may be in the White House on certain things. That alone, that approach, is an answer to prayer. Praise God for that. We're going to come back. Lots ahead here on Janet Mefford Today. We'll see you in a second. Stay tuned.
Here is today's Capitol Hill Brief with Concerned Women for America President Penny Nance.
As we get ready to celebrate Mother's Day this coming Sunday, I want to invite you to join Concerned Women for America in prayer for a change of heart for our country, a shift away from the sin of abortion and towards a day when every life is embraced with joy as a gift from God with intrinsic value. That beautiful picture requires a shift towards mothers in crisis pregnancy, so that they do not feel alone or trapped as they face the realities of their situation. So I pray you consider what you can do to help a mother in need this Mother's Day. Let us love in word and in deed. May God bless you and your family.
Join us on the front lines. Fight to defend critical issues like the sanctity of life and religious freedom. Together, we'll bring biblical constitutional values back to our nation. Visit CapitolHillBrief.org to give today. That's CapitolHillBrief.org.
In these times of increased stress and conflict, both in your life and in the world, you need to see the unseen in order to stand strong. But what does that even mean? This is Jeannie Nigro with Unshaken. Seeing the unseen is the ability to see the spiritual battle behind life's difficulties. It's also seeing that every thought, emotion, word, and action you take makes a difference in the spiritual battle. When you react with fear, stress, anger, blame, or even shame, you're increasing the enemy's reign in your life. However, when you respond to conflict with prayer, fasting, praise, and declaring scriptures, then you increase God's reign. God is calling you to wake up and see the unseen battle behind your struggles. Only then will you stand strong and unshaken, no matter what happens in your life or in the world. For more on how to remain unshaken in a world that's all shook up, go to jeannienigro.com, JeanneNigro.com. That's jeannienigro.com.
We are back on Janet Mefford Today. So much pro-life winning. I love this. Abortion giant Planned Parenthood has called this week the world's worst week for women's health as a number of great pro-life moves and measures are being enacted and moved forward from Washington, D.C. to Tennessee to Missouri. As we know, last month, President Trump signed into law HJ Resolution 43. He overturned former President Obama's 11th hour attempt to protect funding for Planned Parenthood. And then that resolution, I should say, was affirmed by Congress. And now we've got to take the next step to protect the lives of the unborn. We need to stand behind this reintroduction in the House of a 20-week ban on abortion, as we're seeing it move through several states. And this is something that Concerned Women for America is all over. And we're delighted to have back with us Penny Nance, CEO and President. Penny, so good to have you here.
Oh, thanks, Janet. Good to be back.
Well, it is a lot of winning. I love that quote from Planned Parenthood. They said it was the worst week for women's health. It's like a gift from God. It's wonderful to see how much pro-life.
It's a bad week for abortions, what they mean by that.
That's right.
Because obviously, abortion isn't health care. It's the taking of a human life. It's the opposite of that.
Yes.
But, listen, they don't want to be confused with the facts.
No. Well, a lot of things have been happening. We had the House passing the health care bill that would halt most of the federal funding to Planned Parenthood for a year. We had the executive editor order, on religious liberty that's going to make it easier for employers to drop, you know, coverage of abortifacients, things like that with the health care plans. Mm-hmm. And then what you've been highlighting is the need for us to get behind this reintroduction of the 20-week ban on abortion at the federal level. Bring us up to speed on this, Penny, where this stands and why this is so important right now.
Well, remember, this legislation has passed the House a couple of times.
Yes.
And it always, you know, the Senate is the place where good bills go to die often. And we're going to see that in a number of pieces of legislation. This has never been able to hit the 60 vote level over in the Senate. So we really are going to have to work really hard or else find a way, find another vehicle that doesn't require it to meet 60. But the stronger we are in the House, the more we're able to do, the more education we're able to do, the more difficult it is for the Senate to kill it. And we know this time that we have a president who is willing to sign it into law. This was one of the issues that we talked to Donald Trump about before the election. So this is really literally the only thing that's standing between this piece of legislation that at 20 weeks, which is going into the 6 months of life, when a child has all of her major organs, she has fingernails and eyebrows, she can hear and respond to her mother's voice in utero and can feel pain, we believe that she's part of our human family and deserves legal protection. And the only thing standing between that us and that being signed into law is the U.S. Senate. Right. So we've got to make sure we first get it through the House. It's got to, you know, again, because the Senate or the House went out of session before it was able to pass before. It had to be reintroduced. We need to get that done, go through the proper order. And then next, we've got to really focus on the Senate. But this is, Janet, one of those bills like Partial Birth Abortion Ban Act that brings people to our side, because although not everyone in this country, and most of them maybe even, wouldn't necessarily believe that life begins at conception, they don't agree with the left that children this far along in utero don't have rights.
Right.
So this is one of those that changes the entire discussion.
That's so true. Now, you mentioned something really important. Obviously, as you said, the House has passed this, but the problem is the Senate. We need to get it passed again in the House, but we need to get through the Senate. You work so much with the people on Capitol Hill, and I'm curious if you could give us some insight on how you work on, you know, a House like the Senate in being able to, a chamber like the Senate, in order to get this sort of bill through. What sorts of things need to happen, you know, meeting with senators and lobbying senators and these sorts of things? What takes place behind the scenes?
Well, this is what people need to remember. All politics is local. And the most powerful word in Washington is actually not money. It's constituent. That is a very powerful role. And the moment that Senate phones start lighting up, like we did with Partial Birth Abortion Ban Act back in the 90s, the pressure that was felt, I'll never forget. If I could just kind of give you a little anecdote, back, I'm old enough to remember I was a very young lobbyist working on this piece of legislation, and we just destroyed the other side because it was such a clear case of abuse of children. And we even had a situation where Ted Kennedy was alive at the time. He was a U.S. senator. He went on CNN to speak against the bill. And by the and during the interview, because the House had just voted before it went over there, the interviewer said, you're behind this and you don't think it's rational for people to support this. Your own son voted for this bill in order against partial birth abortion. And he was completely like caught off guard. He didn't know what to say because of course it's rational.
Yeah.
It's the same issue with this bill. It's completely rational. People can all agree that at least going into 6 months, that a child has rights as part of our human family and should be legally protected when she can feel pain. And so what has to happen in answer, direct answer to your question, is it means that constituents, everybody that's listening, gives a call, a letter, an email to their senator and their House member, because we haven't gotten it through the House yet, to say, listen, we can agree on this. This is important. The vast majority of people in this country, this is an 80-20 issue. This is vast majority of people think that this should be law. We can now get in line with public opinion on abortion in this country. Our laws for a long time have not matched public opinion. The U.S. is one of seven countries in the world with the most liberal abortion laws. And in those seven countries are countries like North Korea and China. These are not people who are known for their human rights. So let's get together on this and get our laws in line, at least with public opinion.
I love that. That's so important. Right. We can't just sit on the sidelines and expect that we don't make a difference, because we do.
And meanwhile, while that's happening at the grassroots level, CWA will be meeting directly with the senators and again, advocating for that position, giving them talking points, giving them information, urging them to do the right thing. We also will be talking in media. We will be doing all sorts of strategic alliances and coalition building behind the scenes, working to drive the message. And it's wonderful, and I think it can be done, but we got to work together.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's where you guys really shine, and we're really excited to be partnering with you on this. And, you know, I need to mention here, Penny, how important it is for people to understand. We have in several states examples where the whole ban on abortion at 20 weeks is really gaining momentum. We have the Missouri House, which passed it. We have Tennessee lawmakers giving final approval to one of the strictest abortion laws in the country having to do with 20-week ban. We have Iowa. The Iowa Supreme Court granted this emergency temporary injunction, I know, on the 20-week abortion ban. But it certainly seems as if the momentum is building across the country to protect babies when they can feel pain. And this is just fantastic, Penny. I'm so encouraged by this.
Well, and you should be, because we have come so far on this issue. You know, again, it's been a long 44 years since Roe v. Wade, and 57 million babies have died as a result. But, you know, we are at least getting to a point where we can have this conversation on a national level. And the biggest ability that has changed, the biggest thing that's changed is science. We have science on our side. We have the sonogram, which is just, you know, a picture's worth a thousand words. It actually shows very clearly where a child is in utero. We can detect a heartbeat at 18 days, and it's getting sooner and sooner. So the more time that has lapsed, so much has changed from 1973.
Yeah.
Science has completely grown to the point where it's no longer even a discussion. You look like a science denier to say it's a clump of cells.
Who are the science deniers now, right?
Right, correct.
So true. And, you know, it's interesting. I'm sure you saw this study, so-called study, out from the Guttmacher Institute, which was originally the research arm of Planned Parenthood.
Right.
And this is a study flouting the facts, state abortion restrictions flying in the face of science. And they're trying to make this case somehow, Penny, that, you know, things like requiring ambulatory surgical care standards for abortion clinics is not sound science. And, you know, talking about the health risks of abortion is not sound science. This is just the sound of desperation to me. They sound like they're in complete freakout mode.
Oh, absolutely. And not just them. Clearly, they're led by Cecile Richards,
who
was having a breakdown after the House passed version of the health care bill, which, as you mentioned earlier, shifts 80% of Planned Parenthood's funding away from Planned Parenthood to community health centers, which do, you know, by the way, I should say we have a resource on our website, CWA, that does that comparison and gives you by congressional district, the breakdown of community health centers in each congressional district, and they outnumber Planned Parenthood clinics 18 to 1.
Right.
So she's, you know, she's having this breakdown saying women are going to die and that they won't have care. Like, you know, actually that's not true. Here's the resource to prove it. And we didn't even take into account all the private doctors who accept Medicaid. There's, you know, about 187,000 of those in the country, and all the pregnancy care centers that don't accept government money. So we think that let's actually give this money to the health departments, the local health departments, the local community health centers are actually doing good work, help them expand and continue to care for women, whether it's gynecologically or their heart or their blood sugar, whatever it is that a woman needs, and take the money away from big abortion, which is life-ending.
For sure. I think this lie that it's all about women's health is more and more obvious to everybody that it's not about women's health.
It's about power for the abortion industry.
It's power.
That's what it's about.
Right. And, you know, Cecile Richards has a big budget and a lot of big Hollywood and political friends. It's not like the woman's in the poorhouse without our money. And why should we have to pay to kill children? It's ridiculous.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, her friends should stroke their own check. She needs to learn how to fundraise. Look, it's hard work. I give it to her. It'd be way better just to get a check from Uncle Sam, but, you know, we're working hard to make sure those days are over where she doesn't have Uncle Sam any longer as her sugar daddy.
I love it. Well, CapitolHillBrief.org is the website to check out, and you hear the great Capitol Hill Brief via our friend Penny Nansen. Always good to talk to you, Penny. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
God bless. Bye-bye.
You too. Take care. We'll be back. This Janet Mefford Today podcast is sponsored by Prison Fellowship. Help send a child of a prisoner to Angel Tree Summer Camp with a gift of any amount. Call 855-512-6435 or go to janetmefford.com and click on the Angel Tree banner. Thank you. We are back on Janet Mefford Today, and I so appreciate great pro-family groups like Mass Resistance. They educate people about the attacks on the traditional family and children and religion and society. They have been especially great on the front lines of fighting the homosexual agenda. And in fact, Mass Resistance recently helped to stop a measure in Colorado that would have allowed kids as young as 12 to affirm their homosexuality or gender identity through psychotherapy without any parental knowledge or consent. They are very effective. And so it's no wonder that the rabidly Christian-hating Southern Poverty Law Center has been ramping up its attacks on Mass Resistance chapters in order to discredit them and to silence parents and citizens. So we're going to find out more now from Brian Kamacker, who is founder of Mass Resistance. Always great to have you here, Brian. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful, Janet. Thank you. It's great to be here.
Oh, thank you. I am not surprised that you have the SPLC targeting now, as you say, your Mass Resistance chapters, especially in states like California and Texas and Missouri. Tell us what's been going on.
Well, we've been very active in those areas, doing different things. In Missouri, they're fighting a horrible sex ed, comprehensive sex ed thing in the in the Omaha school system, and they've also just recently stopped a gender identity and sexual orientation non-discrimination law, one of those things that targets businesses.
Yeah.
In Texas, they're doing all kinds of stuff. In California, in Maine, and the Southern Poverty Law Center has, I guess, gotten wind of it, maybe probably by reading our stuff, and they've started targeting the individual chapters rather than just us in general. And they're having, so they list our individual chapters, but not only that, but they're going locally and they're getting the local media, such as the St. Louis, in Missouri, for instance, the St. Louis National Public Radio and the St. Louis newspaper to do articles and radio things about this hate group that's locally.
Please.
And we're going to be doing some exposés on that, but it's just been horrible. Now, luckily, our people there are just, they're not letting it faze them in the least.
Good.
It's these mothers and a few fathers actually that are in these groups. I mean, they are just, they're really, really good.
They are
parents.
Good.
And they can see right through it, and I've been working with them. But, this is what the left does. They know they can't win the argument. So what they try to do is demonize the individuals. And it's been going on for decades. It's getting even worse now under the Trump administration because they hate the Republicans, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And they've become even more unhinged than recently. I mean, than in the past.
Yes.
And we've just, and of course they've targeted the American Family Association, and they've targeted Family Research Council, and every major pro-family group in the United States is on their stupid hate list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're by name too, aren't you? Individually on the hate list.
Oh yeah, yeah. Yeah, they.
Lucky you.
Yeah, and the other interesting thing is that they're poor journalists, so they write stuff up about us that's just, it's all this lies and stupid misinformation and it's just ridiculous. Don't even get me started.
No, I'm with you. And the irony here is the SPLC, wasn't the FBI a couple of years ago decided not to use their statistics anymore? This is the same group, Brian, that put out this hate list that pointed Floyd Lee Corkins, the homosexual activist, to go to the Family Research Council and try to commit mass murder. They still have the hate list up.
Oh, right. And not only that, that huge riot at Middlebury College that injured people when, Dr. Charles Murray spoke.
Yep.
That was instigated by their hate list.
Good grief.
And people actually interviewed the people, the ringleaders of that, and they all said, oh, well, there was this hate list, Southern Poverty Law Center, we had to do this.
Yeah.
And, this is the only way that they can get any traction.
Right.
Is by, violence, by hate, by all these lies, because their arguments don't hold water.
Exactly.
And so that's the beginning. Yeah, that's what it's all about.
Well, tell us a little bit, Brian. I know we've talked before about what went on in Colorado and this measure that would have been horrible. This, the gay activists are the ones who want to take away all therapy for kids under 18 that would help them, deal with unwanted same-sex attractions and potentially leave that behind. But they're all for having therapy for little kids without even mom and dad knowing about it. But you derailed this in Colorado, and I'm really anxious for an update on what happened.
Well, it's very interesting. This is something that the gay activists have been trying to do around the country, is these bills that, basically let kids, consent to psychiatric treatment through these school-based clinics and everything else. And so you get these 10, 12-year-old kids who are persuaded that they need psychological help, and often the LGBT groups use it to persuade them that they're really gay or they're really transgender or any number of horrible things. Mm-hmm. And they, it went through the House in Colorado, which was just massively, liberal. And the Senate is pretty liberal too, but what we did is we brought people in, and they just they were very very forceful, very succinct and explicit about what this does to kids and what this does to parents' rights, and that nobody's going to stand for it anymore. And they even brought in a constitutional lawyer. They brought in. And the difference is that our side too often, wants to sort of be sort of moderate and be, not seem like we're extreme or fringe or
yep.
whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
And, we brought in these parents. One of them's a PhD researcher, and others, very well-spoken people, but said, this is what it's doing. And we're not standing for it. And they spoke all. The other side came in with easily three times as many people, and used emotional arguments and disinformation and all kinds of inappropriate, shall we say, kinds of testimony. They just tore it all apart. And the committee listened, and I think that they turned it around by saying, no, you're not going to do this to our children, and this is why. And I think it really surprised them, because they've already started putting these kinds of, psychologists and therapists in these school-based clinics around Colorado, expecting this to pass.
Wow.
And so they were pretty shocked. I was told by the people there.
Good.
That it got stopped in committee, because they expected it to go through.
Good. But this just underscores the point, Brian, that when we fight back, we can win, which I think part of the problem is the demoralization of a lot of pro-family groups and Christians and conservatives, that they think, they rule everything. The human rights campaign rules everything. Well, they will, as long as nobody fights them.
Oh, yeah. And also, it's not only not fighting, but it's not being afraid to confront the right arguments.
Good.
Our side is often afraid of being called hateful or bigoted or what have you if you confront the LGBT movement.
Yeah.
Directly.
Right.
And you just simply can't be afraid of that.
No. That's key. I mean, that really is key, Brian. That's why you guys have been so successful over so many years, and why I think so much of you and Mass Resistance. We're going to take a very quick break. We'll come back with Brian Kammacher from Mass Resistance. You're listening to Janet Mefford Today. Hi, this is Janet Mefford. One of my greatest experiences as a kid was going to Christian camp during the summer. We swam, we played games, but the best part was hearing about Jesus and learning the Bible from some really loving Christians who were my counselors. Christian camp helped me to grow in my faith in Jesus, and the effects have lasted a lifetime. That's why I'm so excited to partner with Prison Fellowship to help the children of our nation's prisoners have the same experience through Angel Tree summer camps. Now, you've helped these children with incarcerated parents hear the gospel and receive gifts in the name of their parents at Christmas time. But through Angel Tree summer camps, even more kids can hear the gospel and experience the love of Jesus. Through your generous gifts, we're aiming to send 38 Angel Tree kids to Christian camp this summer. Won't you please help? Call 855-512-6435. Now, a gift of any amount will add up to a wonderful summer experience for one of the 2.7 million children who have a mom or dad in prison. The children of prisoners are at higher risk of living in poverty or going to prison themselves. They're also more likely than their peers to go into foster care or to have problems with depression or anger. If you'd like to help send a child to Angel Tree Summer Camp, the number to call is 855-512-6435. That's 855-512-6435. Or there is an Angel Tree banner with a donate button at janetmefford.com. It costs $200 to send one child to camp for a week, but your gift of any amount would be so appreciated. Here at Janet Mefford Today, we never ask you to support us with your donations, but sometimes we do ask you to help support other ministries that we believe in, and we believe in Angel Tree summer camps. 855-512-6435. Again, 855-512-6435. That number again is 855-512-6435 or janetmefford.com. We are back on Janet Mefford Today. My guest, Brian Kamacker, founder of Mass Resistance. You can check them out at massresistance.org, and they have activists and people involved all across the nation and supporters and activists in other countries. And they have been so effective, and it's no wonder that the Southern Poverty Law Center is really targeting individual chapters. Brian, I know you were here in Texas where I am recently, and you had this great gathering. I know Bobby Lopez was there from Mass Resistance Texas, attacking this push for more sexually explicit curriculum and this kind of tolerance and this sort of stuff in the schools. How widespread is your fight now against things like curriculum, not only in Texas, but in other parts of the country? How big a deal is that?
It's really big. It's happening in places that nobody ever thought it would be happening. St. Louis, Omaha, Nebraska, Idaho. Wow. Just all over. North Carolina, we're starting a big chapter in North Carolina.
Right.
And it's not only the United States. We're starting a chapter in the UK. We Right. have like 300 people.
Right.
It's really bad there. We're likely starting a chapter in Alberta, Canada. It's becoming everywhere. The thing in Texas that was particularly disturbing is that a teacher came forth, an elementary school teacher who had been, forced to go through the LGBT training of not only how to indoctrinate the kids, but how to, keep the parents in the dark on all of this, and how to, brush them aside when they, and intimidate them and everything else when they started asking questions, and also how to intimidate other teachers if they didn't quite get on board. And she called us from Austin, Texas, and said, what are we going to do?
Yeah.
And that was one of the catalysts of this whole, exposing what's going on. And, the thing, Janet, that's particularly disturbing is the elementary school push for homosexuality and transgenderism. When you look at it, it really disturbs you. But it's being funded by major corporations through the Human Rights Campaign, and which is a national LGBT, you know, activism group. And that really hurts. You know, these major corporations in America are giving them money to push this agenda in the elementary schools.
Wow.
And that's one of the things that, you know, they're standing up against in Texas also.
Yeah. Who are some of these corporations, just so people know? Do you know any of them off the top of your head?
They're, you know, like, you know, Microsoft, Google.
I mean, the usual
just tons of them. You know, Southwest Airlines, American Airlines, you know, most of the major banks, insurance companies. It's horrible,
yeah.
And they're the same, you know, companies who are fighting against the, you know, the bathroom bills in these various states also.
Yes.
But, you know, getting back, you know, to Texas, people just had no idea that this was going on in their schools. And now that they're finding out, they're really getting up in arms. I mean, that conference was very, very successful.
That's terrific. Well, as you said, there's a problem. What the curriculum, is it the same curriculum? Because I know about, you know, teaching tolerance, and there have been these different efforts to try to, you know, anti-bullying initiatives. That's usually what they use as their entry point. Is it just teaching tolerance, or are there any other big curriculums that are pro-gay that are getting into the public schools across the country besides that?
Yeah, there are different ones. Teaching tolerance is the Southern Poverty Law Center's basically curriculum that
gotcha.
They're pushing.
Okay. Yeah.
And that's, you know, it's so Orwellian. They're basically teaching intolerance. What teaching tolerance is about is that, you know, regular, you know, Judeo-Christian morality is bad and, you know, the left is good. The anti-bullying is another kind of thing that, you know, on the surface you'd think, you know, what's wrong with bullying? But it's all being pushed by the gay groups. It's all, you know, it's a way to push the, you know, the LGBT agenda under the guise of anti-bullying.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, we've written extensively on that because it really doesn't help the bullying situation at all. It actually makes it worse.
Mm-hmm.
The Welcoming Schools curriculum is the one we were talking about, which is the Human Rights Campaign's one, which is completely different than the others. It's actually more pervasive. It's funded by enormous amounts of, you know, grants and other things, you know, from corporations and private individuals, and it targets the elementary schools rather than just the entire, you know, public school system. It really goes into the elementary schools, particularly the lower grades.
Horrible.
And if you saw some of the stuff that they're trying to teach these young, like, first graders, that they can, you know, a boy can be a girl, and, you know, you should be comfortable wearing a dress and all this stuff. And that, you know, if your parents don't like it, there's something wrong with them. Very, very, very disturbing.
Yeah, they seem to be very pro-parental undermining. You know, everything from the Colorado initiative that you helped to push back to the curriculum in the schools. Don't tell mom and dad. Let's do these things without mom and dad. I mean, clearly doesn't that show the nefarious intent that we don't respect your families. We don't respect the rights of your mom and dad who created you and loved you and have been nurturing you and raising you and should have first rights of what you're hearing. To do this, it's just so evil, Brian. There's just no other word that comes to mind.
Oh, absolutely. I agree with you. They are taught that the parents' values are backwards, you know, Neanderthal, or, you know, they're basically backwards and wrong.
Horrible.
And that they even need to feel free to correct their parents sometimes. That's what this all is. And when parents come in and complain, they're really good at undermining the parents and intimidating them and, you know, all of that. And, you know, a lot of parents are so, you know, they're so, you know, shaken by this, they don't know where to go. And that's one of the things that we help parents do is face that, is confront the school system, confront the teachers. And, you know, it's been fairly successful around the country because, you know, the pro-family movement doesn't really do that as much. It's we could do a whole show on
that. Yes, we could. That'd be another show, Brian. I'd love to do that. I think that people are shaken. I think people are intimidated. They think one way sometimes, but they don't act as if they think that all of this is bad because they don't want to come under fire. But the truth is, if you don't fight it, it's just going to continue to metastasize, and then we're really going to be in a world of trouble. So I know a lot of listeners who are hearing you right now, Brian, are saying, well, I want to know more. Like, I'm in this state, and I have things going on in my school district, and I would love to be able to be better equipped to be a pro-family activist in my school system or in my community as these issues come up. How do you advise people to get involved in the fight?
Well, you know, you can go to our website, read what's going on. We have a contact page to get involved. And, you know, we can, you know, we can help individuals. We can help you form a mass resistance chapter in your area. We're, you know, there's a lot of them getting formed. We have them around the world, from Australia to Nigeria.
Oh, wow. That's great.
And into Great Britain. And we have activists in all 50 states. We don't have chapters in all 50 states, but we're hopefully going to get there.
Well, good.
But yeah, the problem is that people don't know what to do. And they get so intimidated and so shaken, they don't know what to do. And we do know what to do, or at least we know a lot of what to do.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know,
and you're effective, and if you weren't effective, you wouldn't see what the Southern Poverty Law Center is doing, targeting your chapters. All the more reason to get involved. All the more reason to get involved. I really salute you, Brian. I love what you guys do, and keep up the good fight, and we'll send people to your website. It's massresistance.org. Brian Kamenker, the wonderful founder, and always such a privilege to talk to you, Brian. It went fast, and let's do another show on that, because that would be fantastic.
Okay, thank you, Jen.
Sounds
wonderful being here.
Thank you so much for being here, Brian Kamenker. Again, the website, massresistance.org. Great group. Thanks for joining us here on Janet Mefford today. We'll see you next time, God willing. Thanks a lot for listening.